Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Lots of those to talk about lately. But anyway, today is Tuesday, October 1st, 2013. Once again, thank you for joining the program this afternoon. We are live here at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, and this program is replayed throughout the day. And so all of you late-night listeners, just go ahead and give us a call at 800-375-4188. But let's go ahead and get started right away with the financial market report. And I don't even want to report it today, Al. It's just so irritating.
Well, you see, this is what happens. You do it every day, so you got to do it today, too.
Gold today down $38. At $1,290.70. What's irritating is early morning trading, it was up. Only after the market broke open did they come in and hammer it, and they hammered it good. Saw a little bit of recovery on both the gold and silver. You have silver down 52 cents today at $21.29. That had a nice recovery. We actually had a low of $20.57. Platinum today was down 15 at 1,393, along with palladium down $4 at 724. Interesting to see platinum and palladium, they managed to hold up a little bit better than gold and silver. But then again, there is absolutely no reason in this whole wide world that gold and silver should have been hit with this type of a blow today, and along with the Dow Jones being up today. But we'll talk about those in just a few minutes. You did have the USDX is just teetering on the 80 level, 80.13, and crude oil was down bigger earlier. We're just looking about half a point move today to the downside at 101.92. Mining shares got hammered too, and personally I think the mining shares, they've been hammered so bad if the past couple of years, worse than physical gold, and I think that has had to put a lot of bad taste in the people's mouth as far as being involved in the gold investments for the past couple of years. But if you have your physical gold, that is something you will always have, and it cannot go to zero. It's a pretty good one of the reasons that we purchase gold and silver. But let's go ahead and get to the paper markets today. The Dow added 61 points, 15,192. Yeah, the NASDAQ up 46 points at 38.17. The S&P up 13 at 16.95. I think they're pushing the NASDAQ. I mean, they want to get back to that $5,000 level that they had back in 2000 before it dropped all the way. And the other markets are just following. But you have to remember, they can do a lot with $85 billion a month, can't they, Al?
Well, I could.
Yeah, I could do
quite. I can guarantee you I could do a lot with that amount of money in a lifetime.
Do you think we could fix the...
Maybe it's an idea. Why don't we tell them to give us the money and we can fix the problem?
Yeah. That's
and
a great idea.
I wouldn't need more than 10 years probably. And if I don't have it fixed at the end of 10 years, you can have your billions of dollars back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they could just write it off.
Probably so.
Write it off.
Interesting day, though.
It certainly is.
And it's one of those things that's, you know, just when you thought it was safe. We see an event like this, and we bounce back down $10 below $1,300 an ounce. It's one of those things you just look at it and say, I mean, I get to the point where it doesn't disturb me. It doesn't bother me. I just kind of sit there. I wince a little bit, but I also grin a little bit. In the end, it really doesn't disturb me. It's again, we emphasize this that, and we've said it a bunch of times on the program, the key to becoming wealthy is, in terms of investments, is you buy low and you sell high. All right? You pay $100 for something, you sell it for $200. You make $100. That is the formula. You buy low and you sell high. This is obvious. This is the nature of generating a profit on your investments. Buy low, sell high. Well, what we see right now is certainly a low, and part of the evidence of that we can compare to silver at the U.S. Mint. Sale of silver in January of this year was 7.5 million ounces. In January, if I understand correctly, and Melody, you can correct me if I'm mistaken about that, but I believe that's correct.
That is correct.
And yet, this last month, the sale of silver was 3,013,000. Sales in silver have fallen by 50% since the first of the year, at least as measured by the Mint. And what that's telling us is there aren't many people buying. The market, the demand for the product has fallen, which is consistent with the buy low, sell high. You buy low, and the reason the price is low is because nobody else is buying. You sell high when everybody is buying. That's the time you sell. And we are at a moment right now when sales are clearly down. Interest is clearly down. And it's one of those moments where you look back and your uncle's not buying any gold or silver and your sister's not buying any and your parents and so on and the neighbors and everybody, nobody's paying much attention to it. That is exactly the time to buy. Buy low, sell high. If a price is low, one of the absolute characteristics is there are a minimum number of buyers. And that's what we're looking at in precious metals right now. And as painful as it is to sit back and say, I think I'll buy some gold. I think I'll buy some silver. You look around and say, nobody else is doing it. You know, do I dare? I don't want to look stupid. Huh? But in fact, that's exactly the foundation for major fortunes. That's when people look at it, see it with their own two eyes and say, I don't worry. I don't care what the rest of them are doing. That doesn't guide me. In fact, what I'm going to do is essentially the opposite of low prices. We have low demand. That is consistent with the buy low, sell high philosophy. All right? Now is a good time. What else we got, Melody?
I think they're going to do everything in their power to keep the markets, the paper markets, higher this week, mainly because of, you know, they weren't going to have a down day after Obamacare going into effect today. I mean, there's just no way in this world they would do that. And I think there's light trading in the markets. I'm not sure what the how steep or how strong the trading was in the markets today, but I'll bet it was light trading today. With everything going on, people paying attention to the government shutdown along with the Obamacare, and it was probably very easy to manipulate the numbers today for gold and silver. You were not going to see strong numbers today, and as long as they have the situation, they're going to put a lot of pressure on gold and silver. But I still believe that we're, you know, yes, it can go lower, but I, you know, it's just hard to believe. You had a little bit of pressure on the U.S. dollar day, and Al, you know, it's like, well, why are people buying? And it's a matter of people don't want to buy things that go down. I mean, it's just, I guess it's human nature.
Of course, they are fearful that it will go down rather than, you know, fearful that the dollar is going down, fearful that prices are going up. They are fearful that the value or the perceived value of gold and silver is going to go down more, and they don't want to get caught in that. And that's human nature. But again, human nature is where you do what everyone else is doing, and when you do what everyone does, you're going to get what everyone gets. And I guarantee you that everyone is not going to get rich. Everyone is not going to protect their assets. And when you do what everyone else is doing, you're going to get what they get, and that won't be a lot long term.
And the fundamentals haven't changed. I mean, this is still a product that has very strong fundamentals, and they will carry on as long as we have a fiat currency. Yep. They are going to devalue our currency. It is just, I know, I hate saying this anymore, a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. But a matter of, we're hoping it's a matter of months or maybe even a year or so, rather than a matter of decades or centuries. And we're hoping that we believe that the time is shorter rather than longer. But, you know, you can understand people are going to be concerned about this. But, and that being the case, most people will not take advantage of the opportunity. But people that are going to make fortunes will look and see. And they're going to say, look, price is down. Number of buyers is down. Interest is down. And yet the long-term fundamentals are up. That's... You know, and it's almost a perfect formula for signaling that this is the time to buy. What else?
Well, Obamacare goes live today.
Yep.
And it just irritates me again. And we'll bring that up perhaps on tomorrow's program. We'll talk a little bit more about our situation. But I think the part that disturbs me most of all, we were talking about this prior to the program, many areas across this country has set up tables to where people could visit. There was a place in Washington.
And these are
today.
Tables for helping people understand and sign up for Obamacare.
And it was almost like a festive. It was like a festival. People were happy. Mm-hmm. Hang balloons. Yeah. Yahoo. And people are very happy that they can do this. Although we all know that those who can't afford it is going to be subsidized by taxpayers' money. It's not going to all come out of their pocket. It's going to come out of the taxpayers' pockets. But this particular part piqued my interest or disturbed me. There's this place at Mary's Center in D.C.'s Petworth neighborhood. They had this table where people could stop by the information table. And the people the staff that was there to answer questions, they were fluent in several languages. English, Spanish, and Americ, if I'm saying it properly. And I'm there, Americ.
How do you spell it? How do you spell Americ?
Americ.
Okay, and Americ is from what country?
It is a Semitic language spoken in Ethiopia. It is the second most spoken Semitic language in the world after Arabic, and the official working language of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia. And I'm there, huh?
And this is in Washington, D.C.
In D.C.
So it tells you a little bit about the
program,
racial and ethnic makeup of Washington, D.C. When they're using a language from Somalia, at least comparable to how often they're using the language English. And I'm wondering where anyone in Washington, D.C. learned to speak English anyway. You say they're speaking in three languages, one of which is English. I'm not sure there are too many people in this country, at least in major cities, given public education, fluent in English. That's becoming, I mean, you almost would see more fluency in a foreign language than you do in English right now.
Perhaps.
It's an exaggeration, but there's a point to it. Still, there's a point to it. But, yeah, it's interesting. And they are catering to people. You know, one of the things that should be true, if we're going to build this economy and if we're going to build this nation, we should all be speaking one language. And if you want any benefits from government, then it should be incumbent on people to either learn to speak English themselves or bring an interpreter along who can explain to them, communicate whatever the language, whatever is being said in English by the government. If you speak Amharic, you're from Somalia, fine, bring an interpreter if that's what you need. If you don't speak English yourself, bring an interpreter. But it should not be where we accommodate foreign people coming into this country and allow them to persist with their own language. It is ultimately damaging to the idea of a single nation. Nations have always been people who speak essentially the same language. They're dialects, we see that, and the rest of it. But if you don't, I mean, one of the ways, how do you recognize if someone's an American? You don't recognize them by the color of their skin. You don't recognize them by the age or how they color their hair or even the clothes they're wearing. If you just look at people's physical demeanor and their physical appearance, you can't tell if someone is from Germany or from Uganda or from the United States. It's, you know, how do you know? You can't tell by looking. But as soon as they speak, you know. You can make a very intelligent guess. I won't even say that you absolutely know, but you can make a very intelligent guess. And it goes to language more than anything else that unites a country as an attribute. And here we have the government catering. Say, come on down. You don't speak English? No problem. You want to speak American? Great, no problem, we'll take care of you. Here's some free benefits, here's some free money. You don't have to learn English, you just have to move in here. It lays the foundation for a division, for cultural divisions, that will not serve this country well over time. Sooner or later, those divisions will rise up. We've seen reports of no-go zones up in Michigan, if I recall correctly, where Muslim communities have essentially warned local authorities to stay the heck out of their community because these are Muslim communities and they're not going to respond to conventional laws. This is evidence of what happens when you fragment a culture, a nation on a cultural basis. There is going to be a kind of animosity and a kind of resentment that's going to build up here. And before you know it, you're more busy, you're more involved with fighting with your neighbors than you are with fighting with people who might actually be a legitimate threat to this nation. So my comment on this is we have no business making this thing, making free services available to people who don't even speak English. It is really a bad policy. I can understand that it's a humane policy. I can understand that people say, oh, we got to help the poor. It doesn't matter what language they speak. I understand people are going to say that, but as a pragmatic principle, not a good idea. If you want to come to this country, learn to speak English. Don't want to learn to speak English, go away. And the government should not be accommodating and making it easier for people to move into this country and yet not assimilate into this country's culture. You know, the reason people come to this country in the first place is because the country they come from has cultural problems that inhibit their ability to prosper. And very few of them understand that the reason they're coming to this country is because they want the system of values this country at least had that was conducive to prosperity. And they have some idea that you can come here from Syria, for example, and you can move in and you can still live like a Syrian and be prosperous in the same way that it was at least once possible to be prosperous in this country. And what I'm going to tell you is I don't think it is. If you want the kind of prosperity this country once generated, you have to adopt the system of values that this country once embraced. And that doesn't just apply to people coming from foreign countries. It applies to people coming out of public school system today. You got to find out what was it, what were the values grandma and grandpa had that allowed them to be prosperous. What allowed this nation to rise to, you know, great prosperity, power, glory, so on? What was that? What were those values? Because those are the values you're going to have to embrace if you want to emulate that former glory and prosperity. If you want to accept that every culture that walks in every system of values, they're all equal and it doesn't make any difference. What your religion is doesn't make any difference. What language you speak doesn't make any difference. None of it makes a difference. It just all works. It's a bunch of crapola. It doesn't all work. Some systems of values, some cultures will prosper. Others are destined to live in the dredges of, I don't know, human civilization, and they're going to stay there until they abandon that culture. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we'll be back in just a moment. Melody, did you want to say something?
Yes, we got the drawing coming up right after the break. So
okay.
Stay tuned.
We're going to drawing. We're going to have a drawing.
A drawing.
Uh-huh. Is it going to be a California smiley face, or what are we going to draw?
We're going to draw for a Mint State 62 $10 gold piece and 20 1-ounce silver eagles.
Okay. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And Melody is now going to preside over the drawing.
Yes, I am. Frank was able to get Carla at the office. I'm right now in the broadcasting room. And she's going to have to turn the radio down in the background. I do hear her. But we're going to have the drawing for the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty Gold piece. And Carla, hello. Welcome to the program. And if you would like to do the first drawing, please.
All righty. Winner number one, we have Frank V. V as in Victor from Maple Shade, New Jersey.
All right. Well, congratulations, Frank. We don't like to give people's last names out here on the radio, but you have just won a Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece. Now, for winner number two.
For winner number two, we have George W. from Shelby, Ohio.
All right. Congratulations, George. Thank you, Carla. Thank you for drawing the names up.
You know, that means I'm not going to pay that bribe I offered you, Carla.
too bad for that.
I was going to give her a silver eagle if she'd pulled my name out of the hat, but she has not done it. So I guess so. No bribe for Carla. Congratulations to Frank V in New Jersey, to George W in Shelby, Ohio.
All right. Thanks, Carla.
All right. Well,
okay,
what else do we have,
good.
Molly?
And so I think that was a very successful drawing, and you know, perhaps.
Well, wasn't all that successful for me, Melody. I thought the fix was in. I thought I was going to get the number one. So I'm a little bit upset about that, but I guess I'll get through it.
Should I give you another month to do it? Should we have another drawing for?
Well, it's fine with me.
Well, yeah, okay, folks. For the month of October, we're going to extend it for another month. I'll see what else I can come up with, a gold coin and silver, but. I'll make that announcement later on in this week. But so all orders for this month, so we'll put you in another drawing. And we'll have that drawing on Friday, November 1st.
Okay.
So, all right. Very good. Oh, I like giving stuff away.
Tell Carla I'm now offering two silver eagles instead of just one, okay?
Okay. I'm
all
sure
right.
She's listening.
All right.
And Carla, you did an excellent job. Where to, Al?
Oh, I don't care. Here's government shuts down on budget impasse. That's the, you know, the news you'll hear all over New York Times. Flurry of last-minute moves by the House, Senate, White House late Monday failed to break a bitter budget standoff. And the impasse meant that 800,000 federal workers were to be furloughed, and more than a million would be asked to work without pay. Now, I have a certain amount of sympathy for those asked to work without pay. That would be a million. But there's 800,000 who are going to be furloughed. And what that means is you have to take a vacation and you won't get paid for your vacation until after you return from your vacation. That's what it means. And there are people are complaining. So, oh, my gosh. In fact, here's Obama. This is from Yahoo News. Obama blasts Republicans' shutdown and defends Obamacare. President Barack Obama on Tuesday defiantly declared that this Republican shutdown risks hurting the fragile economy and pressed the House GOP to abandon its ideological crusade against Obamacare. Well, it's interesting to me that Obama describes the economy as fragile. I mean, that indicates that after over 4 years of his efforts at trying to cause a recovery, the economy is still fragile. That's evidence that his efforts have not succeeded to any significant degree in restoring the economy. It's also evidence that we can't expect to see a recovery in the near future. All right, if they haven't done it the last 4 years, what are they going to do in the next 4 months or even in the next year or maybe 2 years? What's going to change that's going to restore the economy? It's, you know, he's accusing the Republicans of threatening the fragile economy, but it's fragile because Obama's programs have not worked significantly up until now. He's also demands that the Republicans abandon their ideological crusade. Now, if we're having an ideological crusade, does that mean that the Republicans are interested in issues of right and wrong rather than profit and loss? And to some degree, it does. You know, there's nothing wrong with ideology necessarily. I don't mean that you can – some ideologies I disagree with, absolutely. But – They get to moral questions. Ideologies typically involve more morality than they do economics. And Obama wants to just hand out free medical care. Well, not even free, but he wants to make it available to over 10 million people who weren't previously insured. And that sounds like a good objective, but again, as Donald Trump pointed out yesterday, fine, we're going to have 10 million more people getting Medicare, maybe, or medical care. And yet Obamacare doesn't provide for a single additional doctor. How can that happen? We can sit back and say, boy, this is great. We're going to get medical care for people who couldn't previously afford it. Yeah, that's probably true. We're also going to have significantly less medical care for people who can afford it. The total quantity. So how do you balance this thing, and what is right? Is it right to be taking medical care away from people who can't afford it to give it to people who can't afford it? These are complex questions, and I'm not saying that the answer is one or the other, but I'm saying they're questions that should be considered. Yeah, what else? Obama says we need to get and we know that the longer the shutdown continues, the worse the effects will be. More families will be hurt. More businesses will be harmed. So once again, I urge House Republicans to reopen the government, restart the services Americans depend on, and allow the public servants who have been sent home to return to work. Well, first off, is it good public policy that the government have Americans who depend on government for their support and their survival? Is that good public policy? Should we have that many people who are dependent on government? That if somebody shuts the government down, these people now are placed in jeopardy? There's a point here, and you can't give an absolute. You know, there's it's not something where it's absolutely black and white, but there is a legitimate question. Can we build a nation of more and more people who depend on government, knowing that government doesn't produce anything? If you don't produce anything, I don't produce anything, Melody doesn't produce anything, the government doesn't produce anything, and we are all dependent on government, who is going to produce the food and the fuel and whatever else it is that we need? It is a bad public policy to encourage dependence on government. And certainly on the federal government, if anything, if you want to depend on your local government or maybe even your state government, it might not be as bad. I don't think it's not a good thing. You know, this federal dependence, not good public policy. And he talked about allowing the public servants who've been sent home to go back to return to work. Now, those public servants, I'm betting that the public servants who are being furloughed right now, who say, oh my gosh, the poor 800,000. Look, if they've got any money in the bank, they're cheering. They're going to be paid for the time when they're not working. So for them, the shutdown is a paid vacation. An unscheduled paid vacation. The only problem they're going to have is if they don't have any savings in the bank, and given the amount of money that federal employees are paid, odds are they do. They're going to get a free paid vacation for several days, maybe several weeks. Hard to know. And they make it sound like, oh, poor, let the poor public servants return to work. They really miss their jobs. I doubt that's true. I bet these people are down at the saloons right now and saying, yay, hooray for the tea party. Let's have another round of beers over here, and let's have another round and let's toast the tea party. They shut the government down. Finally, is the government really here to help us? They tell us that all the time. Or are they here to govern and control us? I'd say they're here to govern and control us. And part of the evidence, here's another article from the Rutherford Institute. And the headline is from NSA spying and Viper, VIPR, sweeps the domestic drones. A roundup of the police state programs not affected by a government shutdown. The article says, in part, says, like clockwork, we've ticked back the annual government shutdown scare that inevitably dominates news headlines and sends stocks seesawing for a few scant weeks until, at the very last moment, the nation is miraculously pulled from the brink of disaster. It's always an entertaining show with both Republicans and Democrats doing their best to one-up each other with heartbreaking anecdotes about the millions who will suffer in the event of a government shutdown and showy bravado over the need for the greatest fiscal stewardship, while conveniently failing to rein in two of the biggest drains on our budget, namely the military and the surveillance industrial complex. Incredibly, although more than 800,000 government workers could find themselves without paychecks or with reduced paychecks, President Obama and Congress will still get paid on time. Okay, no matter what happens, we've got to pay the Congress. They do such a great job. President, great job. We've got to make sure they're paid. The rest of the clowns, maybe not, but the Congress and the President are just doing such a tremendous job. We've got to pay them. They go on. While a government shutdown will inevitably impact everything from Head Start and key welfare services to national museums and IRS audits, the one area not impacted in the least will be the police slash surveillance state and its various militarized agencies, spying programs, and personnel. That's interesting to me. There'll be no reduction in the amount of spying that takes place during this government shutdown. Clearly, the 800,000, as we've heard yesterday, talked about it a little yesterday, and you find it in the newspapers, the 800,000 who are being furloughed are defined as non-essential personnel. And judging from the from this report, says the one area that's not going to be impacted will be the police surveillance state. It's telling us that government spies are not deemed to be non-essential. This is one of the essential features of government, is their capacity to spy on the American people. And on one level, you can understand that. There are people around who want to do some bad things. But how many? How many? A few dozen, a few hundred, a few thousand? Is that sufficient reason to put 300 million Americans under surveillance? Are the threats by, again, a few score of people? Few dozen, few hundred, maybe a few thousand. Are there potential threats? Are they enough to justify turning this country into a police state? The government says yes. I would say no, it's not. I would say, and I know this is difficult. It's a, you know, we have a, somebody's cat goes up a tree and everybody starts to weep about the poor kitty. Somebody send out a battalion from the 82nd Airborne to rescue the poor little kitty from the tree. I'm inclined to let the cat stay up the tree. If the cat climbed up the tree, let the cat climb down. All right? And I know that it sounds, you know, harsh, cruel, the rest of that sort of thing. But you can't rescue every cat who's gone up a tree. We can't afford it. And insofar as government tries, or at least professes to try, they're leading us in a bad direction. There's some things in life that you just have to live with. You can't just ask government to legislate and pass a new law every time somebody skins their knee. It's part of life. It's part of growing up. Got to let people skin their knees. And the government doesn't want to do that. And it brings me to another article from the Washington Times, which is entitled Inside the Beltway. That's the column title. Festering anger at the federal government. Confusion over Obamacare, shutdown hysteria, and continued partisan discord have yielded results. Public anger at the federal government is at the highest point on record. So says Pew Research Center, a survey gauging the ire and frustration of Americans. Some are angrier than others. Anger is most palpable among conservative Republicans. 41% say they are angry at the federal government, the highest among any partisan group. The number is 26% among the general public. 26% of the general public is angry at the federal government. 18% among liberal Democrats. Of course, it is no surprise that the Democrats, and particularly liberal Democrats, would be least angry at the federal government. But maybe it's a surprise that even there, 18% are angry. And 50% among Republicans who support the Tea Party, the dreaded Tea Party. You know, it is really fascinating how well named the Tea Party is. The Tea Party started with that episode in Boston back at the time of the American Revolution where, who knows, a dozen, 20 Americans dressed up as Indians raided a ship and threw tea that had been imported into the United States through that tea in the harbor, and it had a political effect. I don't know that it had significant economic effect or whatever, but it had a political effect. It was one of those things that you do, and you get a certain amount of mileage out of it. The public says, yay, they threw the tea in the harbor, yay. Today's Tea Party is having an effect, and it's really a wonderful thing. They have managed to capture significant control, influence at least, maybe not control, but influence within the Republican Party. And they're making things happen in the same sense that people made things happen during the American Revolution, and for much the same reason. We were fed up with King George telling us what to do, and a lot of people are fed up with King Obama telling us what to do. And so the Tea Party is having an effect. And I say, hooray. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. We want to remind you that Frank V. in New Jersey and George W. in Shelby, Ohio. Frank V. won a MS-62 $10 Liberty, right, Melody?
That is correct.
And George W. in Shelby, Ohio won a tube of 20 Silver Eagles. True?
That is true.
And they, in order to win them, what did they have to do?
They made a purchase this in September with Discount Gold and Silver, and all purchases for the month, their names were placed in a drawing. And we drew the names today, and we're going to extend that through the month of October.
Okay, so whoever buys in this month, on the first of next month, or the first day we have a program next month, there will be another drawing. And if you've made a purchase this month, ta-da, your name will be in the drawing. And if, you know, if you are lucky, blessed, whatever, you may win. Oh.
What?
So I guess the next thing, just for what it's worth, here's something from the Washington Times. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi says stopping the government is a product of Republican ideology. She particularly blames Tea Party members. This is in the Washington Times. The headline is, Pelosi, it's the Tea Party shutdown. The Tea Party. They're the ones that are responsible for this shutdown. So, who are you going to support in the next election? Tea Party. They got my vote, folks. If the Tea Party is responsible for shutting down the government, Tea Party's got my vote. Here's something.
But it's so amazing, though, Al, how they distort the... I mean, they're just flat-out liars. If you watch any of the news programs, financial news programs, or any of the news coverage on the government shutdown, and they will have these sound bites from these politicians. I mean, they just... The Democrats... I mean, it's just amazing what comes out of their mouths. I mean, the Republicans did give them a balance. They did give them a budget. They're the ones that turned it down. But yet when they get interviewed, they turn it around. And I mean, it's just like children.
The world has become a crazy place. And it's astonishing that we let them get away with it. Somewhere along the line, there's got to be a revolt, perhaps in the jury box. Or people simply become so skeptical of government. You know, they had the prohibition where they prohibited alcohol during the, I don't know, roaring 20s on up into the 30s. And alcohol was prohibited. And it laid the foundation for all of these government agents chasing people who were making booze, beer, whatever. Laid the foundation for a serious police state. Not as serious as the one we have right now, but it was the same idea. And what stopped prohibition wasn't the government coming to its senses and saying, gee, this is a threat to American liberty. What stopped it in the end was that people sitting on juries simply started voting against the government. Didn't matter if the government caught you with 50 barrels of Jack Daniels. They couldn't get a conviction. And they'd take you to court, and the jury would say, not guilty. They'd catch another guy with 100 barrels of Jack Daniels and take him to court, and the jury would say, not guilty. And they couldn't get a conviction, and therefore it was no longer practical, profitable, politically correct to try people for a violation of what I don't remember. What was it? 19th Amendment. I don't remember which one created prohibition, but the result was government had to come back and say, okay, we're gonna repeal that amendment. Why? Because we can't get a conviction. And the point is, the people took their political grievances to the ballot box, or excuse me, the jury box, not just the ballot box, the jury box. And they began to sit on juries, and the government got the message. You don't have to stand up and broadcast and tell everybody, I don't like the government, therefore I'm voting against, I'm going to vote in favor of the defendant in this traffic court case, and certainly not cases of murder and arrest, that sort of thing. But there are a bunch of laws, and probably most of them nowadays, that don't involve a real victim. They're just violations of government regulations. Nobody's been hurt. Nobody's been damaged. You're just being charged with willful uppityness. You're not doing what the government says. Well, if you're on the jury and you see that happening, you need to consider, do you want to just go along with the government, find people guilty every time? You know, you look at people that are being charged $500 for maybe a turn running a stop sign. I don't know what the fine is right now for not fastening your seatbelt. This is not a fine to teach people a lesson. This is extortion. There's no justification for this. We are in a time when people are having a difficult time financially. A lot of people are. And yet the government is extorting money under the guise of issuing traffic tickets. And it never changes the frequency of accidents, injuries. Nothing's improved. All that happens with all these fines, for the most part, there may be some positive benefit, but the big issue is let's get some more money for the government. What would happen if you're called in for jury duty? And you said not guilty. And the next time they have another one of these cases on somebody who's been charged a couple hundred dollars for a seatbelt violation, somebody just says not guilty. Not guilty. I'm not going to vote for it. Not guilty. This is a way that the American people can push government back in the corner. We've done it before. We did it with prohibition. We could do it now. It's not necessary to simply wait until the next national election before you cast a vote And suppose that's all you have, that's all you have to do, that's all you can do to try to restrict government's encroachment, growth, tyranny. You can do it in the jury box. Just vote against the prosecution every time you're called up. They'll get the message, just like they did with Prohibition. And if they do, we can restore a measure of freedom, liberty to this country. We can diminish the size of government if people just begin to realize you have power if you care to use it and if you have the nerve to use it. You're not helpless. Circumstances in this country are not, we're not in a situation where there's nothing we can do. There's lots that we can do if we would just do something. Talked about it yesterday. We talked a little about limited government. And the Constitution said, it doesn't say, but we all understand that the Constitution was to create a government with limited powers. And we use the term limited government. And what do we mean by limited? And the answer is found in who imposes the limits. Limited by law. Government limited by law. Limited government is limited by law. Limited by whose law? Limited by the people's law, your law and my law. What is the people's law? It's not the statutes that are passed by the Congress or the state legislatures. It's not the regulations passed by the local government. The people's law is the Constitution. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution. It's the people's law. That is the law that the government is supposed to obey if we're going to have limited government. But clearly, our government is moving toward the unlimited end of the scale. And if limited government means limited by law, and particularly limited by the people's law, which is to say the Constitution, then what does unlimited government mean? It means government that is not limited by law, and certainly not limited by the people's law. Unlimited government is essentially lawless government. And the bigger the government grows, the more lawless it becomes. And we watch this happening. No one, I doubt, I can't imagine that anyone in this audience would argue that in their lifetime, the government hasn't moved from the limited end of the scale toward the unlimited end of the scale. I'm not arguing that government is unlimited, but it's certainly headed in that direction. Unlimited means lawless. Unlimited means not limited by the people. Is that where you want to go? If you don't want to go, there's things that can be done, and voting on a political basis in the juries is one of those alternatives. Melody, did you have something you wanted to throw in, another article, or shall I continue?
You can continue.
All right, well, here's another one, talking about government and the war on drugs. Huh? I'm familiar with this because I've been sued by the Attorney General of the state of Texas for $25,000 per day. That's $9 million per year. For the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance. I was one of seven defendants. I was the last one added. Case started in 2001. I've talked about it on the program a bunch of times. But as a result of that case, the controlled substance in this question was colloidal silver, which is an inexpensive antibiotic that consists of distilled water and silver ions in suspension in that distilled water. The government wanted it off the market. I was fiduciary for a trust that leased some furniture and a couple of computers to a company that was manufacturing colloidal silver. They went after the company and they brought me in as fiduciary for the trust that was associated with that company. I read the relevant laws and realized that the drug laws only apply to animals. The war on drugs is based on the presumption that you and your children and your parents and your family and everyone in your community are nothing but livestock. This isn't a new situation. We found 23 separate instances in Texas and federal law that applied in our particular case. Case was, last time we were there was 2006. We found 23 separate instances, some federal, some state, 23 instances that applied in our case, laws that define the people as animals. We found it in five other states where we looked, and we have since found it in the, going back as far as the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act. The drug laws are defined in a way that presume the people to be animals. I'm a student of the Bible. I read the law, and the first time I saw it, I thought it was just stupid. And then I said, oh, my God, I saw it a second time, and I realized, no, it's not stupid. They really do think of us as animals. They can't do that. Genesis 1, 26 through 28 says, on the sixth day, God created man in his image, gave man dominion over the animals. I can't be an animal as a Christian. Can't be an animal as a Jew. Not in that faith. We've got a First Amendment, guarantees our freedom of religion. How are you going to pass a law that subjects me, causes me to be subject to a law that presumes me to be an animal when my faith says I am not? I drafted a freedom of religion defense against this case, and the Attorney General of Texas dropped it, and that was after they'd invested 5 years in the case, 6 years in the case. It was 2001, actually 2007 was the last time we had a hearing with these people. They had 6 years in the case and almost $500,000 invested. I drafted a religious freedom defense, and they dropped the case, all of which is intended to partly sprain my arm, pat myself on the back, but also show you that I have a little familiarity with the concept of drugs. All right, and the reason I had to drop the case is the whole war on drugs is based on the presumption of your animals. The millions and billions of dollars of profits earned by pharmaceutical industries that manufacture drugs are presumed based on the presumption that you're animals. American medicine, including Obamacare, is based on health care laws, which include definitions of both drugs and medical devices, both of which presume the people to be animals. Huh? So here we have the war on illegal drugs is failing. From the BBC. Illegal drugs are now cheaper and purer globally than at any time over the last 20 years. The war on drugs isn't working. You understand? As laudable as it may be. I don't do drugs. I very seldom drink anything other than water. All right? I think I've had two Coca-Colas, or at least parts of Coca-Cola. I might have had one 16 ounces of Coke in probably the last 15, 20 years. I don't do drugs, I don't do soft drinks, I don't drink anything hardly other than water. So I'm not here to advocate the drugs. I think drugs are stupid. I think it's unfortunate and sad that people have to do drugs. But it's also the fact that drugs are stupid and unfortunate and tragic are not sufficient to justify the police state that's grown up around the war on drugs, particularly when the police state has not been effective in curtailing the supply or quantity of the supply or quality of the drugs that are available to people here in the United States and around the world. The International Center for Science and Drug Policy said in its report suggested that the war on drugs had failed. The report's researchers said it was time to consider drug use a public health issue rather than a criminal justice issue. Report said that the street prices of drugs had fallen in real terms between 1990 and 2010, while their purity and potency had increased. In Europe, for example, the average price of opiates and cocaine, adjusted for inflation and purity, decreased by 74% and 51% respectively. In other words, the price of opiates, what I assume is heroin, opium, I'm not sure, but opiates. Price has fallen by 74% in the last 20 years. The price of cocaine fallen by 51%. Again, between 1990 and 2010. The report also found that there had been a substantial increase in most parts of the world in the amount of cocaine, heroin, and cannabis seized by law enforcement agencies since 1990. Meaning what? It means even though the government is finding more heroin, cocaine, and marijuana, they're seizing it. They're getting more. They're not seizing it enough to make a difference. The price is still falling. They are unable to restrict the supply. The price is falling. The drug continues to slide in, and we're out of time, way out of time. Sorry about that, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk. I get off on my soapbox, and it's hard to dismount at times. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There never seems to be a single penny left for me.